Well, hello. Wait, do you like my voice? Do you want me to do it again? Well, hello and welcome to Association Transformation. Did you hear that? It's not even my theatrical voice. This is my day-to-day allergy voice. How
You
are
know,
you,
when
Mr.
you,
Anderson?
I'm good. When you started it, then I instantly thought of Jessica Rabbit.
Thank you. I'll take that. I was thinking like a Kathleen Turner, you know. I
Yeah.
don't know. I'm trying to, especially in these virtual environments, I'm trying to use my allergy voice, as a
And
superpower.
it's working, can I say? It's
But
working.
yeah, do I have
Excellent.
more authority with this voice? Like you take me more seriously?
Yeah, go on. Yeah, let's you tell yourself.
Maybe with the
Yeah.
Jessica Rabbit comment, maybe not. All right, so let's get serious. It's April 1st, so we're in the midst of spring. We're in the midst of allergy season. It does happen to be April Fool's Day. And I wondered about the tradition of this quasi holiday. I wouldn't call it a holiday. Do you
Wouldn't
guys?
holiday. No, we don't call it a holiday. In fact, I was trying to convince my little 6-year-old was asking me about April Fool's the other day, and I was actively trying to explain to her how, I'm not really into it very much, but she's got a long list of tricks she's going to play on me later on, apparently. So,
Okay. All right. So this does exist in other countries. This is recognized, not a holiday, but a fun excuse
yes.
to prank and lie. And if you didn't know April Fool's Day, it's the day to tell a falsehood, try to get people to believe it and get them to play along as long as possible. And then you pop out and say, April Fool's, just kidding.
Oh, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. So I thought this would be a good opportunity as part of our global award-winning podcast conversation, Association Transformation,
That
that
was
you
not
never change.
that was not an April Fool, by the way.
That was not, that was actually
Well,
real.
we are a global
All
award.
those things were true.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't want people to think that what we're talking about today is not true. I just thought today would be an opportunity to talk about some of the falsehoods, some of the lies that we tell ourselves as we avoid change. As we, as executives, as volunteer managers, as chapter executives, as association leaders, there's a lot of denial that goes on. There's a lot of false self-talk and white little lies that we tell ourselves that can delay or augment the change that's required to evolve, to succeed as an organization. And I have a couple that I've come across in dealing with clients and dealing with employers and in dealing with, association leaders over the years. I thought you might have some fun stories and that this would be a good April 1st conversation.
Oh yeah, I'm up for it. Let's do it. But go on, you start us off. You start us off because I'm really keen to hear what your experiences are.
Oh dear. All right. Well, buckle up. Here we go. So I've found one of the biggest fibs that both volunteer leaders and staff tell themselves about why leader engagement is not working or why the organization isn't performing is, oh, we need a governance refresh.
No.
Oh, it's our documents, it's our bylaws, it's whatever.
Yeah.
That is the biggest load of you know what, because you and I both know, having rewritten governance policies, having built bylaws, having built these infrastructures of policies for organizations, that that's really the last piece of the puzzle. The truth is that if you don't have the people, the
Yeah.
leaders, and the willingness to comply, the willingness to see through the plans and the policies that are laid out, that what's in your governing documents means nothing.
Yeah. But why do you think people tell themselves those fibs? Why do you think they
Well,
kind of
because
tell them?
it's easier to blame, the, the tactile, static
The
words
system.
on a
The
paper,
system.
the system, than it is, to look around the people, the faces at the table, or even themselves
Yeah.
as to why, success is not occurring.
Yeah, I think a lot of that, I think blaming the system is it's an easy get out, and as is sort of wishing for the end, as it were, wishing for the end of your tenure or your this particular cycle, and kind of pushing off the what pushing off the change, pushing off the challenge, pushing off the work, for someone else in the future. I often find within those circumstances, if the system, they perceive the system, well, they don't, they tell themselves the system doesn't work because it's easier. to blame something else. But it's also easier to pass the buck down the line as
On
well.
to the next. Absolutely. So I don't know about you, but this is one of these common fibs that falsehoods that I find organizations falling victim to, and it delays progress. It delays ownership. It deflects from what's really going on. And maybe on the flip side of that, the other one I see a lot is membership departments who work their butts off and are quite proud of their work, touting 90 some percent retention rates. Great, we've got 90 some percent retention rate. We're doing great. Well, I mean, again, if that's what you need to tell yourself, that's one thing, but your goal every year is a plus one, is a net of plus one. If you're retaining less than 100%, then you're not growing, you're getting smaller. So it's one of these, little white lies that we tell ourselves to feel better, but yet I think we are not acknowledging the holistic nature of what that data point is telling us.
Yeah, but I mean, I think we're all very good at using data to sort of to mask our feelings about performance or about our perspectives about direction. I myself, used to comfortably round up to the nearest hundred when presenting my retention rates or my recruitment rates. But again, I understand. Again, I understand that people do it.
I get it, and I'm not faulting people for
Oh,
doing it. I just want to, peel back and,
why do they do
let's be honest with ourselves. We can't lie to ourselves.
Well, try as I may. No, exactly. Exactly. So why do people do it? Why? I mean, trying to reflect on, when I've been in the past and thinking, well, why was I doing that? And I think, well, I got a few, actually, I've got a few. Well, we risk turning this into a therapy session, but I've got a th few theories as to why I would do that. But go on, what are your thoughts on why people do that?
Well, I think that look at the reason for the data point. Usually that data point is intended to update a board on membership progress, or it's used as a point of progress with a membership committee. I would argue that the difference between a discussion at the staff table around how we're doing and what the numbers look like is very different than a discussion with the board. When we talk to our boards, when we make a report to them as to what's going on, end of year, strategic plan update, whatever it is, things are very shiny. Things are very sugar-coated. Things are very rounded up. And when we talk as staff, it's like talking to your shareholders versus talking to your senior team. They're two different audiences, and sometimes you need these, I don't know, these enhanced, positively focused, optimistic data points, little white lies, whatever they are, to keep people on the right side of enthusiasm.
There's the nub of it. Right, there's the nub of it right there. Because I mean, optimism bias is a problem amongst chief executives and senior executive teams. And like I say, I was always full of optimism when I was sitting around with the board, but running the staff meeting, it's often a different kettle of fish. But are you suggesting then that people are staffers that we're afraid that our leadership, our volunteer leadership teams are going to, or what? Are going to walk? Are going to,
No, I think the bigger fear is that they then want to get more involved in the logistics. They want
Oh,
to get
right.
into the weeds. They want to grab the steering wheel.
Oh, right. So this is a control thing. This is as much a control
Well,
thing, arguably.
I think, you do your sales pitch, you keep your leaders, you keep your champions and your evangelists informed of what's going right. You keep your staff discussing the balanced conversation of what's working and what not working, so you can be effective on both sides of that. But if your evangelists and your champions stop believing in you or stop believing in what they're putting their time and effort into, you're right. They are either going to disengage, or as I find with a lot of boards, because they're high performing, type A, successful individuals, they turn around and want to get into the mix. They want to get their hands dirty. They want to take it over, and they question, they they question the staff, and staff lose their credibility and, yes, ultimately control.
But you see that ultimately, I know that you know it, ultimately that doesn't work.
Of course not.
Yeah. I mean,
And that's why
I was going to say, it always
you're.
become a cropper. You paint a beautiful picture all the time. Eventually, you will come a cropper with your
A
board.
what?
A cropper, come a
What's
cropper.
a wait. Hold the press. Stop the presses. Sorry,
And
we this is our translation moment
now
sponsored by
I need to
Brewer
Google
Pratt
this now.
Solutions.
Okay.
Translation moment. What is a cropper?
All right. Okay. I'm gonna as we as we, piece of live research going on here. Come a cropper. What is the meaning of the phrase come a cropper? The word crop derives from the Old Norse word crop, which was the name of a hump or swelling on the body. Oh my God, what does this
What?
mean?
Where is this going?
Come a cropper is one of the list of British phrases that is associated in the popular imagination of Victorian inventors. Honestly, this explanation makes no sense to me. It just means, you're going to get caught out.
Okay.
You're going to trip over yourself. You're going
All
to,
right.
you're going to be found out. You're going to be found out.
Okay. Okay, got it.
Basically.
All right, thank you. That translation moment brought to you by Brewer Pratt Solutions. Thank you. All right, so back to it. In the theme here of April Fools and the lies we tell and the falsehoods that we live with, I think this, and you use the right term, this optimism bias, I think we have to be careful with that and trust our boards to handle more of the truth.
Yes,
If we
absolutely.
inform them in the right way and we educate them as to the holistic context of a data point, of a realistic outcome. Not every meeting is going to make money. Not every year is going to be plus one. Not every investment account is going to double. Whatever it is, we have to treat them like adults, but give them the guardrails with which they can react and respond.
And I think within that context, there's then I think nicely segues to another fib that I think boards are very good at telling themselves, which is that members care. What will our members think about our decisions? I think there's a lot of decision making at senior leadership level stalls or is slowed down to a snail's pace because there is this misconception that the membership spends its time thinking about what the board is doing, in a governance or strategic context. You've heard me say this before, that ultimately the membership cares about the value that it gets from the organization.
Yeah, the membership is much more selfish than the board would ever perceive. They're
Say,
not watching their action. They're not keeping track. They're not
not
following the politics and personalities of this. I 100% agree. And I think the biggest lie is that it's usually not the members who want to hold up on change or as
absolutely.
entrenched in
Yeah,
status quo. It's the board themselves,
or
and they use
themselves.
the members as their proxy for stagnation.
That's a really good, yeah, that's a good phrase. Yeah, they proxy. Absolutely, it is. And I think, and again, this points to this issue around education and training and professional support for the boards that they feel comfortable and competent and confident in their decision making. And I think when boards are telling themselves these little white lies about, oh, we can't possibly make that investment because what would the membership say? Or, that's not what members, want us to do. I think, really, again, they're projecting onto an audience their own fears about their own decision making. And I think that then points to much, much bigger issues about, decision making processes, reporting mechanisms, schemes of delegation, the whole kit caboodle around, the function of being a board of directors. So, for me, that's always a telltale sign, is if your board is you see it as stalling, or use or projecting on, the member's opinion into the discussion. I think that's a big red flag that they're actually not feeling really very confident in themselves
Yeah,
as to
yeah.
what they should be doing.
Well, and that, I think that leads to the other big lie that boards tell themselves. When there's no one in line to nominate. There's no one with interest in rising up and being a part of the board. That pipeline, that funnel is empty. Boards and sometimes even staff executives blame the membership. Well, they're not engaged. They're not informed. They're not aware. They don't care. And in reality, I ask, do they know what they're in for? Is there a job description? Have you made these digestible, realistic jobs that someone can do well? Do you make it easy for them? I've been having a lot of succession discussions lately, and it's funny where individuals want to kind of place the blame. There's a lot of blame placing instead of solving the problem. And this is one of those lies that it's kind of like placing the blame on the victim,
And yet, how often have you heard, a potential volunteer saying, "Oh, I'd love to get involved, but I just, it feels," either they say, "I just don't know what's, how to do it or what's required," or they'll say, "Oh, it's just, it feels like a bit of a club,
Yeah, a club, or I don't want to be on for 4 years, or I don't have time to give to that. They do all this and I don't know what comes of it. To me, it's an input versus output thing. And yeah, that's another one of those big lies that at the board level. You've been a staff executive. What at the staff level are some of those falsehoods that you tell yourself so you can sleep at night?
That the conference is going to be a huge success.
Don't worry, everyone will register last minute.
That's
It'll be
right.
great.
So I used to have a run in. I used to sit opposite in the office. I used to sit opposite my conference manager, and every day we would, as soon as the conference was launched, we'd just be watching the numbers, and it would just be this drip, drip, drip for weeks and weeks. And then, 48 hours after registration had closed, oh, then the numbers would skyrocket.
Of course, of course. And if you just hope hard enough, if you just wish and pray hard enough, oh my
I
goodness.
think a big part of it is, I think as staffers, I think sometimes, I think where the flashpoints tend to occur, this I'm reflecting now, this is very similar, links to the conversation we had about a month ago, wasn't it, about volunteer, the relationship between staff and volunteers. And I think for me, a lot of the white lies, the fibs we tell ourselves as staff is around, the knowledge and expertise that our volunteers have. I think maybe there's a lot of assumptions around our volunteers, that somehow they, because they're willing and able to volunteer, that somehow they know what they're supposed to be doing and that they don't
Yeah.
need to be managed. And
Well,
I
the
think,
lie that interest equates to appropriateness.
there you go.
Interest
That's it.
equates to maybe not expertise, but interest equates to eligibility. Interest equates to a good fit. And this is the danger of not having that pipeline, of not being prepared, is that you end up having to take what you get. And deal with that. Oh goodness, the conference.
But the conference, actually, that in all joking aside, that does the conference issue does point, I think, to another, little, is it a fib or is it just, yeah, I think it is a fib we tell ourselves to give ourselves, this false sense of security around the kind of income of an organization, is that, as long as the conference, is our flagship, as long as that's successful, the rest of it can be at best mediocre. At worst, don't worry about it, it's fine, because the conference is our flagship. And I think so much effort is thrown into, flagship events, and I question sometimes.
Or publications. I'm working with a lot of science groups, and it's
Okay,
their
journals,
journal or their magazine or trade show,
the
whatever
flagship.
that crown jewel is. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, often then that is, very much to the detriment of the rest of the membership portfolio. And I think we did see a shift away from that, when we ceased to become, I think we've seen many organizations in conference contexts have sort of ceased to be these quasi event management companies in the last few years. But I do still think, yeah, this piece around singular focus on one major income generator. And we tell ourselves if that's all right, then the members will just keep, they'll just, well, in reality, every association I've worked for, the vast majority of members don't come to conference. There's too many of them to come to one flagship event.
Yes, the financial lies that we tell ourselves. I love it when I meet with a group and they're telling me about their financial health and they tell me how much they have in reserves. And that's why they're so confident in their path forward because they're sitting on so much reserves. But when I dig in and I find out, wait a minute, most of that reserve is because you own a building.
Ah,
But,
right.
that's not a liquid, that's not
Yeah.
an operating reserve.
Yeah.
So, people patchwork these stories together to get to the narrative they want. And I think the most dangerous one coming out of the pandemic is the lie that chief staff executives are telling themselves that their staff are satisfied, their staff are not burned out, their staff are happy. And maybe the employment market isn't a section of the newspaper that everyone's reading these days, but the more staff I talk to, the more the burnout is real, the more the need to move on is real, the more the interest in something different is real. And
Yeah.
if you're a chief executive telling yourself that everything's okay because you're not hearing anything,
Yeah.
I encourage you to dive in and get proactive.
And listen to the episode that we recorded, gosh, a couple of years ago, wasn't it? We did an episode about the job market and the
Oh, yeah.
sector, didn't we?
It's just this burnout piece. I mean, coming out of COVID, you and I experience it. I think everyone experiences it. We've never been more busy. We have to be both virtual and hybrid and in person at the same time. Everyone wants work-life balance while at the same time we have to produce and do more, usually with smaller teams, because we all got lean during COVID. When we had to save money and balance resources. And I mean, I talk to teams all the time, staff, association staff that are smaller than they've ever been before. And they're too afraid to staff back up or to spend that money. And the staff are exhausted. They are more than exhausted. And I just don't want chief executives to take silence as satisfaction or silence as, loyalty or commitment. You have to get ahead of this and don't wait for the dam to break, I guess is the moral of this story.
It's interesting because all the things I'm just reflecting on, the what we've been talking about for the last 20 minutes, the common theme here is around communications.
Well, true. And maybe the biggest lie is when you think communications have occurred and they haven't.
And I can see, a lot of these fibs perpetuate themselves because we're not adequately communicating with one another. Either that or or if we are, we're not necessarily communicating honestly with each other, either as the exec to the board amongst itself, board to members, staff with volunteers. The common sort of issue here is a willingness to be honest, and to stop. And actually, I don't know how to link.
Honesty might not be the right word.
I don't think
Honesty might not be the right
I
word.
think why what do you think it is? I think it's honesty. I think it's
Well,
a
I think
lack of honesty.
it's not just when you tell people something or how you tell them, it's what you choose to tell them. And I'm not saying that staff should tell the board every single operational detail under the umbrella of the organization. I'm saying choose the right things to share in the right context with the right directive. Set your board up with the information necessary to make the decisions you need them to make.
You're so God, if we've been recording this on video now, right? You are so in my face over this.
Am I like too close to the camera right
You are
now?
like getting up in my face on it. I'm like, I don't disagree with you. I completely and see, this is me openly communicating honestly with you.
All right, so here's our exchange. Everyone can be a part of this April Fool's exchange. Yes, we I think we're getting better at communicating, and when we know how to
We do.
communicate when we disagree, right?
I think we're excellent communicators with each other. I'm not joking. That isn't an April Fool. That wasn't an April Fool. I do think excellent communicators.
Sorry, I was waiting for the brunch.
No, because we've been working together now, what, nearly 5 years?
I know, I think
And
I'm the longest relationship you've ever had.
possibly I've been married for less time than these last 5 years, I think. It's no, we do. We've fallen out in the past. We've had misunderstandings, but we always come back together because we're open and honest with each other, and
And we're mission driven. I mean, this is about the nonprofit community. This is about association professionals. This is about all that they're capable of when they are honest with themselves.
there you
So
go.
happy April Fools.
Happy April Fools. Only till 12 o'clock. If you're listening to this podcast after 12 o'clock on April Fools, noon, none of this matters because this is all
Oh, stop it.
this is
No, I
true.
mean, this is just an excuse to talk about one of those taboo things that I don't think we talk about enough.
Yeah.
Because, we all set things up in our head to survive, to get through, and I
And I think,
appreciate you for listening.
well, I think my last kind of contribution to this is I think listeners go back and listen to the episode that we recorded around the job market post pandemic. I forget, I think it was in 22 sometime. And I also listen to the Futures Literacy podcast that we recorded because that's very much about the fibs we tell ourselves to get through the day. And listen to that as well, because and reflect. I think there's a lot to be learned from about from the futures literacy stuff as well. I'll leave it at
Well,
that.
and there's your homework from Andrew. So your April 1st homework. Happy spring, everyone. Thanks for putting up with my voice. Thanks for putting up with Andrew, as always. And until next time, put your members and your mission first.